Welcome to the program for Friday, December 14th, 2012, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's the Federal News Countdown every week in the 3 o'clock hour on Friday. Two people who are experts in the world of the federal government choose the news stories they think are most important to people who work for the federal government. Rank them in order from 3 to 1 and come in the studio with me to count them down on the Federal News Countdown. This week it's Deborah Roth, a partner at the law firm of Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and one of the co-hosts of Fed Talk every Friday morning at 11 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Wasn't you today, though?
It was not. It was not. It was my law partner, Bill Bransford. He was here in the morning.
Nice to see
I'm
Bill, as always.
I'm taking the afternoon shift here at Federal News Radio.
And just a shameless promotion for myself and for Bill. He was on my program yesterday talking about the rules about gift giving and having parties and all of that stuff in your agency this time.
And I said to Bill, you should just keep it simple and just tell people, give them one word, no. No, don't do it.
You really are a lawyer, aren't you?
Just keep it simple. Yeah. I mean, the gap of where they can do it is so over-regulated. Why bother?
Well, Bill, all of the conversation that I had with Bill is posted on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And Debbie, it's always great to see you on the program.
Thank you.
John Palguta, the Partnership for Public Service, is my other expert in the countdown this week. This hasn't been a busy week at all for you, has it?
Not at all. We've just sat around trying to figure out, what do we do next?
Yeah, of course, the big deal with you guys is the best places to work. And I have a sneaking suspicion that topic will come up at some point during the program.
It may well. It'll be a surprise.
I don't want to give it away. Although we've already given it away on federalnewsradio.com because all of the news stories that we count down on the Federal News Countdown are posted on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We start today with
Number 3.
John Palguta's third most important federal news story of the week is my colleague Jared Serbu's story, headlined Sequestration Worse Than Thought, Pentagon Frets. And this is actually, it sounds like a bookkeeping issue, but it really is a lot more serious than that just because of the nature of the agency involved and the amount of money involved. Is that fair to say to you?
That is correct, Francis. And what attracted me to the story, first of all, you know, you got to have a story up until we solve it that deals with the budget crisis. But what I liked about this was it does not use the term anywhere in the story, fiscal cliff.
Yay! Go Jared!
Instead, he actually points out something that was quite interesting, I thought. The Defense Department obviously would have to, you know, take a very substantial cut if we don't reach an agreement by the end of the year and we have sequestration. And DOD was looking at a cut of about $52 billion, not insubstantial. But then they discovered, as they started to actually do real planning, because now we're getting close where we can't just assume it's not going to happen, and they started looking at what the benchmark point was going to be, and actually they now have to come up with $62 billion. An extra $10 billion. You know, and a billion here, a billion there, you're starting to talk about real money.
That's right. The problem with this, the timeline here, is because of all the things that are stacked up, all the things that Congress hasn't done, one of the things they didn't do was pass the Defense Authorization Act until just recently, that it's now in conference with the House. And the deal here, as Jared reports, it basically is, it appears that whatever comes out of that conference that President Obama will sign will be about $10 billion over what the limit was according to the Budget Control Act. So the Defense Department's going to have to figure out what $10 billion to cut out of what Congress gives them to meet the rules of the defense of the Budget Control Act. Then they would have to do whatever the $52 billion cuts are to meet the sequestration rules. And this goes to some of the problems that I think we'll talk about later on in the program, John, which it really is agencies are being yanked all over the place because of events that don't have anything to do with their own doing. Primarily, they have to do with things that Congress is or is not doing.
It makes managing a complex enterprise that much more complex.
This story is posted on federalnewsradio.com right now. John Palguta's third most important federal news story of the week, Sequestration Worse Than Thought, Pentagon Frets. Deborah Roth, your third most important story is one that I love just because it's the water cooler, coffee, gossip stuff that we thrive on in this city. It's from GovExec. The headline is Meet Chuck Hagel, your likely new Secretary of Defense. And the situation here essentially is, since Susan Rice took herself out of contention for the Secretary of State job, mm-hmm. that will likely go to John Kerry, who mm-hmm. was, until a couple of days ago, most people people were assuming he'd go to defense. That's not going to happen now. And Chuck Hagel's kind of materialized seemingly out of nowhere in the last week or so that he's kind of been more in the limelight.
Yeah, you know, and if you read sort of beyond the GovExec story, some of the other things that are out there, you read that something I didn't know, which was that Hagel's name was floated around in the first Obama administration. So it's not sort of, if you know that and it's true, it's not that surprising that his name floats around the second time. I like this story, and I think it's actually interesting. People might not see any kind of symmetry between my third story and John's, but they're both DOD stories. My story really is, it's the beginning, you know, we're starting to pick a new cabinet. And while I chose not to focus on Rice pulling herself out, because I think it's more of a political story, and we're really talking about sort of the workings, the bureaucratic workings of the federal government. But you're starting to see the cabinet shape up. And so for federal employees, every change of administration every 4 years, even if you have the same, you know, even if you have a reelected president, you get a new administration. Does it really make a difference in how the place is run? And I think the answer is definitely yes. And I think people, even low-level federal employees, I think it makes a difference in their life who the agency head is. So that was my number three story. But I thought the symmetry is we're both talking about DOD, and for different reasons. But DOD is a third or more of the government. Over 600,000 employees, executive branch employees, civil service employees who go to work every day work for DOD. Over 600,000 of the about 1.9 million federal employees who go to work every day. That's a huge hunk of the federal workforce. And so what's news there is really news across the government.
I have had any number of officials at various agencies in various capacities say, what I want to know what's going on inside DOD. It's almost like it's the California of the federal government. What happens there is indicative of what's probably going to happen at my agency, whether it's initiatives or whatever.
And it's not surprising, at least to me, given that, given the size and the value that DOD brings to the executive branch table, that if they're starting to float names out there for the new cabinet, they float DOD first, now that we know that Rice is dropping out.
It's the other interesting thing about all of this talk is what a friend of mine called the LBJ rule, which was his rule was that if you floated your name in the press, you were taken off the list immediately. And so it's not surprising to me that somebody like Hagel shows up at the last minute, because that's kind of been the MO that the president has used throughout the first term for finding people for the cabinet. You don't hear these long, sustained kind of drives to get people into particular jobs.
Yeah, and the other wrap on this administration is that if it looks like it's going to be difficult to get through the Senate, it doesn't get backed that strongly by the White House. And people, that was a lot of the criticism last night in, you know, the 24-hour news cycle that was out there about Rice, that he should have fought harder for her. You know, agree or disagree with the strategy that the White House uses to get their nominations in, that's sort of been the rap, as if it's hard, you know, they don't really put that much effort into it. And, of course, Hagel, former senator, very well-respected senator, former Republican, and again, to head up the largest entity inside the executive branch, sounds like a smart pick. And it sounds like, you know, you start with one like that because, you know, for the politics of it, you know, it's easy. And you hope it goes through and it's smooth sailing and you gain inertia. So I thought, even though for employees who don't work at DOD, that story mattered. It was a signal of maybe where things are to come for the rest of the cabinet.
Chuck Hagel's potential selection for the Secretary of Defense position is Deborah Ross' third most important federal news story of the week. It's posted now at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And we'll talk some more about the moves that the president will make over the next several months as his cabinet changes. And when the countdown continues on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, Deborah Ross and John Palguda choosing the stories this week on the Federal News Countdown.
Astrium Services Government, Inc. is the newest name in satellite communications and the only provider of both ComSatCom and MilSatCom systems to the U.S. government. Part of the EADS North America team, Astrium Services Government will soon double X-band and UHF capacity available with the coming launch of two new Skynet satellites. U.S. government customers rely on them for flexible end-to-end SATCOMs using GSA's FCSA contract vehicles. Visit them at the DoD SATCOM Users Workshop.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a company that's more than a century old and built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding, with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff. Done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
Are you shopping for insurance in the same place you go to watch cat videos? Don't spend hours trolling the internet looking for cheap dental or vision plans. Call the Government Employees Benefit Association. With GEBA, you'll work with knowledgeable representatives who understand the intricacies of your government benefits and lifestyle. Based on your needs, they can offer government employees, like you, basic and enhanced policies at competitive rates. They offer comprehensive dental plans that give members the freedom to choose a dentist they know and also the ability to roll over up to $1,000 in unused benefits. With GEBA's Vision Plan, members get the advantage of competitive rates with an extensive network of ophthalmologists, optometrists, opticians, and retailers, plus an annual pair of glasses or contact lenses. Open enrollment for dental and vision plans runs from November 12th to December 17th. For more information, visit GEBA.com or call 1-800-826-1126 to speak with a representative today and stop wasting time searching online.
Tom Temin here with a preview of Monday's Federal Drive. Employment attorney Lynn Bernabe joins us. She'll sort out the effects of a big Supreme Court ruling on Merit Systems Protection Board appeals. Plus, we'll celebrate the 10th anniversary of the Electronic Government Act. We'll talk to one of the original people who helped get it all started. Those stories and more Monday morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, the Federal News Countdown this week, with the three most important federal news stories of the week as selected by Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth, and John Palguda of the Partnership for Public Service, and we're up to the second most important federal news story of the week as selected by John Palguda from GovExec. It kind of ties in, Debbie, with your story number three on the transition in the cabinet. John, your story is from GovExec. The headline is, "Don't be fooled. This transition matters more than ever." Now, I think during the 2008 transition, you and I probably did 413 interviews about transition, you and your colleagues at the partnership.
Give or take a couple.
Yeah, just here and there. I might have missed one or two. And we haven't talked about the transition nearly as much this time around, and maybe that's to our detriment and to the detriment of the agencies, and maybe we should try to remedy that between now and January, because this analysis, I think, makes a pretty good case for the fact that although it's not formal and although it doesn't happen on a date certain, everybody doesn't automatically change jobs noon January 20th, as we saw in 2008, there will be a lot of change, there will be a lot of transition, and it will make a big difference potentially as to how agencies do their daily business.
Absolutely, and there's two aspects to this story. First of all, it's reminding folks that look, even though it's the same administration, there's a lot of churn going on out there. We have over 3,600 political appointees in government. We've talked about a few of the high-profile folks, but there's a lot of people, you know, second or third layer down who hold very important jobs, and a large number of those folks, you know, are going to be leaving. It happens every time, even in the second term, people kind of sign up for, you know, one go-round. The second aspect of this that's important to keep in context is that it's not just that you're going to have some churn at a time where things are going smoothly. You're having churn at a time where the government's really under stress. We've got huge budget issues. We've got huge disagreements over priorities and direction. And there's some very important decisions that have to be made. You know, agencies will eventually get a budget, and they're going to find that they can't do everything that, you know, they were thinking of doing. And so then it's going to be, well, who's in charge? Who's going to decide what we do and what we don't do? It makes a big difference. And, you know, from the time of the election to the time of the inauguration, it's only 75 days. And here we are, less than half that now, about 35 days to go. And, you know, we got to start thinking about who's going to be managing the government going forward in the next term.
And that's compounded by the fact that in some very significant places, you already have people who are acting in their jobs.
That's right.
There's no permanent leader at the Office of Management and Budget. There's no permanent leader in a number of other jobs around government. Jeffrey Zients certainly is capable and qualified, but he does not operate with the full confirmation confidence of the United States Senate yet, necessarily. That may be a job for which he is confirmed at some point, but it hasn't happened yet. And so there are any number of these places all over government where that has the potential to make a difference. Debbie, your number three story about Chuck Hagel at Defense, that's another example of the potential turnover that we're going to see. That's obviously at the very highest level.
And of course, one of the things you always have to remind people in this town is that it is customary, and I wonder if John agrees with me that it'll happen again this year, that it is customary that you tender as a political appointee, that you tender your resignation to the president, even if you intend to stay on in a second administration. The custom has always been that you tender. So you can count on generally a substantial portion of the current number of political appointees won't renew.
Well, that's going to be interesting, Deborah, because I'm hearing it, normally you're absolutely right. I mean, normally the White House Personnel Office, you know, lets all the appointees know, hey, give us your resignation, and the president will decide which he accepts. This year, I'm hearing they're actually not doing that call. I may be wrong.
Interesting. That is so interesting.
But what drives that? I would not be surprised if they simply, you know, they realize, you know, it's okay if people stay in place, and we're not going to get things any more upset than they are in terms of people thinking about you know, new directions and all that. So they may be looking to keep many of the people, or maybe perhaps as many of the people as they can in their political slots until the dust settles.
That is very interesting.
Now, regarding the story about former Senator Hagel, we've seen for the last probably 6 months or so, every time a story came out about Secretary Panetta that reflected on the possibility that he would leave, he never intended to stay for an extended period of time. He said that when he took the job and at his Senate confirmation and so on. That reference was always made in those stories. And a lot of times what we would see is a reference in that story. He intends to stay until the budget situation is firmed up with his budget experience and expertise and so on. Well, we don't know when that could happen. I mean, here we are now talking about his potential successor, and there's no deal on the horizon. Defense authorization bill is still up in the air. There are still many, many pieces floating around out there that haven't been plugged into the puzzle yet. And so it gets right to your point, I think, John, about who's really going to be in charge at whatever point in time a deal happens. We have, as I mentioned, Mr. Zients is at the top of OMB right now, but he's an acting administrator. And So what I read in the stories about the negotiations is it's mostly Jack Lew and Rob Neighbors who are working with Speaker Boehner's staff, and the president and speaker talk directly to each other, of course. But having all of these folks in these positions, it really, I would imagine, leaves a lot of question marks for people who are trying to figure out who really is in charge and who's going to be in charge whenever something is finalized.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you know, there will be a new swearing in, there will be a second term, and somebody's got to run government. Somebody's got to manage government.
The story that John chose for second most important federal news story of the week is from GovExec. The headline is, "Don't be fooled, this transition matters more than ever." And you can find it linked up, like all of the stories on the countdown today, at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Deborah Roth's second most important federal news story of the week is next on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You might not think getting work done on your home or apartment would have any effect on the way your child grows up.
Now I know my ABCs. Next time, won't you sing with me?
But if it was built before 1978...
Spell? Glacier.
Glacier. Renovations can spread lead paint dust that can be harmful to kids.
Glacier.
That's why the EPA now requires that your contractor be lead-safe certified.
The 10? No, could it be... Touchdown!
In children 6 and under,
Madison Davis.
Lead paint can cause everything from loss of IQ and motor skills to behavior issues and severe learning disabilities, disabilities that may not show up for years.
Deshaun Gaines.
Don't let lead paint take away your child's future before it even begins. For a lead-safe certified contractor in your area, visit www.epa.gov/getleadsafe or call 1-800-424-LEAD.
This is John Gilroy from Armature and host of Federal Tech Talk. After almost 300 interviews, I've had many guests who talk about cutting-edge technology and agile software development. How would you like to be part of a fast-paced team with an agile approach to projects? We need talent. We seek experts in .NET, WCF, jQuery, and HTML5. Take advantage of this opportunity where you can make a difference. For more information, go to armaturecorp.com or send your resume to radiojobs@armaturecorp.com.
By combining HP 3PAR utility storage with HP ProLiant Gen 8 servers powered by the latest Intel Xeon processors, you can lower your total cost of ownership and improve project ROI. GovConnection, a federal elite HP partner, can show you how HP can power your data center into the future. Call GovConnection's experienced federal team, where service and commitment to the customer are priority one. Call 800-800-0019 today.
Looking for ways to help your agency help the environment? GSA has two free online resources that promote sustainability. With GSA's newly updated carbon footprint tool, you can compile your agency's annual greenhouse gas inventory and track progress toward meeting your reduction goals. And with GSA's sustainable facilities tool and green products compilation module, you can help your agency make sustainable purchasing decisions. To learn more, join the conversation today at interact.gsa.gov/sustainability.
Be tobacco free. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Nicholas Garlow with HHS HealthBeat. Each day in the United States, approximately 3,800 young people under the age of 18 smoke their first cigarette. An estimated 1,000 youth in that age group become daily cigarette smokers. HHS Assistant Secretary for Health, Dr. Howard Koh.
Each year, more than 440,000 people die prematurely from smoking or exposure to secondhand smoke. That's why HHS launched BeTobaccoFree.gov to provide information on avoiding tobacco and ending tobacco use.
BeTobaccoFree.gov is a one-stop shop for the most up-to-date information on the health effects of tobacco, evidence-based methods on how to quit, and more.
We know, regardless of age, those who stop smoking and using tobacco can substantially reduce their risk for disease.
Learn more at BeTobaccoFree.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Nicholas Garlow.
The Federal News Radio United Way Community Spotlight is Justin's Quest.
Hi, I'm Justin Freelander. When I was 13, I was diagnosed with a primary brain tumor. My family and I started Justin's Quest to find a cure, because where there's life, there's hope.
Accelerated Brain Cancer Cure has joined Justin's quest for a cure. You can join the brain cancer research revolution by making your tax-deductible year-end gift today. For more info, visit federalnewsradio.com. The Federal News Radio charities are fed by Papa John's.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. You are listening to the Federal News Countdown and the most important stories of the week selected on this program by John Palguto of the Partnership for Public Service and Deborah Roth of Shaw, Bransford & Roth. And we're up to the second most important story of the week as selected by Deborah Roth. Debbie, your story is the Fed's better off compared to private sector workers survey finds. That's one of them. You're also writing about the Best Places to Work survey that the Partnership for Public Service and Deloitte put out. And we have a number of stories about that on federalnewsradio.com. But what I took away from your choices is just the ongoing image that federal employees have, both in the world at large, the nation at large, and of themselves. And for a long time, it seemed like those were two very different things. My sense is that they're now converging. Is that the same sense that you
they're
have?
Getting they're getting closer.
Yeah,
when you look at the numbers, they're getting closer. But it was interesting. If you looked at the headlines of how the stories are reported, it would look like there's this tremendous disconnect in the economy. But it looks like the numbers are sort of getting closer. The survey that was of Americans that of private sector surveying them about their perspective of government workers was three very important things. That the majority, 67%, felt that private sector employees worked harder than government employees, had better job security, and made more money. Right, I thought what was interesting on the issue of money was just 2 months ago, the Federal Salary Council did their annual report and found that, in fact, according to their statistics, federal workers had fallen 8% that year behind private sector workers. So, but the perception is that the private sector works harder, has better job security, and the federal workers work harder, better job security, get paid better. Federal workers were split about down the middle, 50%, in their own view of whether they got paid more than the private sector. But their level of happiness declined this year, even though I thought it was very interesting. And John's going to speak about that, as I know I'm not going to take the thunder from him, but because the partnership is the one who sponsored the survey, but their level of happiness, their happiness level declined, and declined not insignificantly, even though when you hear the number of points it declined, I don't think it's insignificant. But the perception is that they're better off, and yet their level of happiness declined. What's that about, you say?
What you're referring to is the Best Places to Work survey from the Partnership for Public Service. And what I think we'll do is just mash these together. Your number two story, Debbie, and John, your number one story, like a big federal employee cheeseburger, and just talk about them in both this segment and as the program continues, because they are essentially, I have to say, as I looked at the numbers when this came out, John, you know, and I saw all the headlines, federal satisfaction plummets and all of that. And it's they were appropriate. I didn't see anybody that I thought was steering anybody wrong. But I was quite frankly surprised that the numbers weren't worse than they turned out to be. That was my only surprise with any of the stuff that's in this. We have a link to the Best Places to Work report at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. But that's the only surprise on my part, John, is I thought it'd just be a lot worse.
Well, you know, folks thought it was going to be a lot worse in 2011. And it dropped about a point.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, you know, we talked about the resiliency of workers and all that. But 2012 now, we've got 2 years. There's a number of things going on here. You know, 2 years of pay freeze is just one aspect. But what we saw was that we started doing, you know, this tracking in 2003. And each year, despite all the turmoil going on, we'd seen gradual increases until last year. We saw a small dip. But then this year, we saw, you know, a drop of 3.2 percentage points. Now, you're right. That's not huge. It's not a, you know, cut in half or all that, although we saw big dips in specific agencies. But when you look at the government as a whole, you know, over 2 million employees, that large a number of folks, you know, the perceptions don't change dramatically, because if something's going up here, something's going down there, it evens out. So when you look at a huge workforce like that, and this survey is based on over 700,000 people responding to the survey, and we include a couple branches of Congress, the Congressional Budget Office and Government Accountability Office, that was a big drop in 1 year for that large a population government-wide. And then we started looking at individual agencies, and we saw, you know, drops of 20 points in some agencies, or, you know, even more in one. And it's there, you start getting the impression that, yes, indeed, you know, something's going on out there. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you very quickly, because people focus on the pay issue, and it's like, well, yeah, so we, you know, they got their pay frozen and their, you know, their job satisfaction commitment went down. But you have to think also that we just went through an election cycle. This kind of goes back, Deborah, to what you were talking about
before the show.
You had a lot of things being thrown out there in terms of, you know, allegations that simply weren't true, that government's too big, federal employees get paid too much, federal employees don't work hard and all that. And you have that constant drumbeat through the whole election cycle. It starts wearing on people. You've got the pay freeze. That's one of it. That's a symbol. But then you also have, and I talked to a lot of folks in agencies, Francis, you have a lot of folks saying, hey, look, our workload's going up, but our resources to get the job done is going down. So on top of everything, we're being asked to figure out how to get the job done with fewer resources. We know we can't just do more with less, because we're turning that crank as fast as we can. So it's like, you know, give us a break here. And the other aspect of that, in terms of workload and resources, I believe, you know, most federal employees are actually very, very dedicated. They believe in the value of what they do. You know, they do like their jobs, but it hurts your satisfaction when you cannot provide the services or the benefits the way you want. You know, Park Service employees who can't maintain the parks. Social Security, you know, claims examiners who see the lines, you know, forming outside the district offices, and it's, you know, hard to keep up and all that. That's part of it. I think the pay freeze was only a minor part of this drop in satisfaction, commitment, and willingness to recommend government as a good place to work.
All right, let's talk more about this when we come back from the break on the Federal News Countdown this week. The second most important federal news story of the week, Deborah Roth, from Fed Manager, Fed's Better Off Compared to Private Sector Worker Survey Finds. That's a Rasmussen Reports survey looking at the opinions of citizens about their government. And John Palguda's most important federal news story of the week on the Best Places to Work survey from the Washington Post, on all the stories posted on federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute.
The year was 1957. The date was October 4th, and Americans woke up to a strange new reality. The first satellite launched into space wasn't ours. The Russians had gotten there first. Sputnik 1 may have been the size of a beach ball, but it was the space shot heard round the world.
Today, a new moon is in the sky.
And it galvanized the nation into action. The Martin Company rose to meet the challenge. Then, on St. Patrick's Day, 1958, a Martin-built Vanguard rocket roared into space with the Shamrock taped to its side, and put the world's first solar-powered satellite into orbit. 4 months later, the president signed the legislation that created NASA. The rest, as they say, is history. A history that is still being written by the scientists and engineers of Lockheed Martin. Their story is our story. See it unfold at LockheedMartin.com/100 years.
Who are the top leaders in the federal government? Federal News Radio wants to know who has inspired you and what qualities do you think make a great leader? Nominate someone today. A top leader can be someone who knows how to motivate a team to success or a mentor to younger coworkers. A top leader can be anyone. You tell us. Nominations will be accepted through January 8th, and finalists will be announced as part of a Federal News Radio special report in February. Find the nomination form at federalnewsradio.com. Search Top Leaders.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. Newsmakers, talk to Jason Miller on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Republican Senator Bob Corker from Tennessee.
Hopefully part of what we'll see happen with the Budget Control Act, where we're cutting $1 trillion over the next decade, is going to be tremendous compression on what we're doing through government contracting.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown continues with the most important stories of the week, selected by Deborah Roth and by John Palguda, and we are up to now
#1.
And as I mentioned previously, we're continuing our conversation about John Palguda's selection for the most important Federal News story of the week. It's the Washington Post story about the Partnership for Public Service's best places to work in the federal government rankings. And you can read that story, and you can read my colleague Jason Miller's story about the rankings at federalnewsradio.com. Debbie, there are a couple of things here. You and I are talking during the break with John about this, and we each, you and I, have different views on what we think is the most important number coming out of this. What do you think is the most important number in this
ranking? Well, I think our views are the same facet of the same part of the gem, which is that when you look at the overall level of happiness government-wide, how the partnership rates federal employee happiness, you know, it's not so much, in my opinion, that it dropped 3.2 percentage points, but on a scale of 100, they're only 60.8 happy. That's their job satisfaction level. And for people who are listening, people who go to work in an economy like ours, which is despite what people, the critics say, it is a robust economy. It is capitalism. It's make what you can out of your job. And so the whole concept of capitalism is that it's filled with opportunity, that you can do something and achieve. And federal employees are only at a scale of 100. They're really only 61% satisfied with their job. That ain't such a happy crew. And if you're looking at a productive workforce, they always, to measure a productive workforce, they look at job satisfaction. That is barely okay with your job. You, of course, picked out another number in there which compares them, because you remember my second story was a comparison of the private sector to the federal system and how they view each other.
And I think the most important number here is that employee satisfaction in the private sector, same scale, same course of determining the number, is a 70.0.
That's a huge difference.
That's a big difference. A federal government, 60.8. Now, John, help us understand where this number comes. This is called the 2012 Government-Wide Best Places to Work Index Score. And this report says responses to three questions from OPM's Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey determine the index score. I recommend my organization as a good place to work. Considering everything, how satisfied are you with your job? And considering everything, how satisfied are you with your organization? So you combine the ratings that people, how people responded to those questions.
Right. We take
to get that score.
The positive responses. So a positive response is yes, I would recommend. The questions asked us agree, disagree. So it's I agree or strongly agree. I would recommend my organization. That's a positive response. I'm satisfied, very satisfied. That's a positive response to the other two questions. We take all of the positive responses. We do a weighted average, and that's your score.
Okay.
Now, we take the other questions from the Office of Personnel Management Survey. We have other categories, teamwork, leadership, and so on. But the overall sense of, you know, engagement, commitment, is based on those three questions, and we have comparable questions from major private sector employees, and one of our partners, Hay Group, does a similar analysis for private sector, and we see basically about a 10-point spread.
But 10 points is so significant, because as John and I were saying before the show aired this afternoon when we were just catching up with each other, no business First of all, there is no business of the size of the executive branch of the U.S. government. It is the largest single employer worldwide. But any large blue chip business that's, you know, runs as a blue chip on the stock exchange, publicly accountable, no business would run their organization the way our government has run this branch of government for the last 2.5 years. Nobody would do that. And I also thought, you know, John said one other thing of great import to job satisfaction. He said people don't feel like they have the resources to do what they came to government to do. And I recall John saying to me before the show that historically job satisfaction for federal employees, when they were asked about it, was really mostly about serving public service. People who come into public service.
Right. They want to do meaningful work. They want to make a difference.
That's right. And so if you look, like, what's the disconnect? I don't really think it's about the pay freeze. I think absent the pay freeze, but you put other things in place. You had a budget for 2.5 years, regardless of what the budget was. You didn't bash federal employees the way they do, you know, every way they can. And it wasn't just in the general election cycle. I think there are congressional committees that just can't wait to find some federal employee who has screwed up and demonized them. And I think federal employees feel that. And I think absent those forces, even with a pay freeze, I wonder if the survey results would have been higher because people do go to serve the government for things other than money.
Well, what you're saying is borne out on the second page of this report. It says effective leadership. This is, I think, by the way, this is the most troubling fact, non-number fact in this entire publication, John. Effective leadership has been the key driver every year since the rankings launched in 2003, followed by a match between agency mission and employee skills. The third most important factor, pay, satisfaction with pay, didn't show up in this for the first 7 years that you did this work.
Yes.
Only in 2010, replacing work-life balance as a key element, and the rest of it is linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. So Debbie's right. It's not about the pay.
It's not about the pay.
And this leadership issue is troubling in my view because this shows up not just in this. We saw this, of course, when we looked at the numbers from which you drew this work, the employee viewpoint survey. But your colleague Tim McManus was just on with me a couple of weeks ago talking about the results of a survey in the Presidential Management Fellows that
Yes.
your organization has done. Same deal there. The main problem that the fellows saw with their program is the leadership that they reported to at their agency didn't understand what the point of the program was and what they were there to be able to do and what they were capable of doing. And this is a leadership problem that's all over government, and it's really starting, it appears from the work that you've done, that it's really starting to impact mm-hmm. the people who are being led to the point where they're going, I'm not necessarily sure we're going in the right direction. They're not saying that they don't believe in the mission of the agency, because that's another thing. Am I interpreting what you're showing here right? People
yeah.
still buy the mission. Am I right, John?
Absolutely. And there's two important things, I think, related to what you're saying, which is, number one is, I want to remind folks, this is not, the goal of this is not to make sure federal employees are happy. The goal is an effective government.
That's
and
right.
All the research shows that, the more engaged your employees are, the more satisfied they are, the more productive they are. So that's number one. But number two is, even though we're seeing some really, bad trends here in this, we have agencies and organizations, almost a third, who managed to go up. We did an award ceremony yesterday for the folks who are at the top of these rankings. And we have places like transportation. Ray LaHood, Secretary, John Pecari came to the ceremony, the Deputy Secretary. They have focused on the people issue from a leadership perspective. And it's not, top down. It's let's work together. Let's engage our employees. And they've seen, improvement. We've had Dave Kappos from the Patent and Trademark Office. Their workload's going up, 5% a year, hundreds of thousands of applications. Their engagement scores, however, have gone up, and their backlog has gone down. Hmm. Clear connection between employee engagement and job satisfaction.
The most important federal news story of the week is selected by John Palguda. Is headlined at federal agencies, a survey finds sagging job satisfaction. It's a story about the best places to work in the federal government rankings from the partnership. And you can find that story. You can find all of our coverage about best places to work at federalnewsradio.com. And the most important federal news story of the week is selected by Deborah Roth. We'll wrap up this week's Federal News Countdown in just a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
When you build the world's most complex ships for the U.S. Navy and U.S. Coast Guard, there's no question you know how to do the hard stuff right. At Huntington Ingalls Industries, it's what we do every day. We are a company that's more than a century old and built upon the foundation of two legends, Newport News Shipbuilding and Ingalls Shipbuilding, with an unwavering focus on safety, quality, cost, and schedule. Huntington Ingalls Industries. Hard stuff. Done right. Visit HuntingtonIngalls.com today.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, bangs, scores at one. Okafor.
Up court to Crawford. No look pass. Ariza. Stop. To it.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at WashingtonWizards.com/tickets.
Astrium Services Government, Inc. is the newest name in satellite communications and the only provider of both ComSatCom and MilSatCom systems to the U.S. government. Part of the EADS North America team, Astrium Services Government will soon double X-band and UHF capacity available with the coming launch of two new Skynet satellites. U.S. government customers rely on them for flexible end-to-end SATCOMs using GSA's FCSA contract vehicles. Visit them at the DoD SATCOM Users Workshop.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Please join me this week for my special guests, Michael Heller and Sally Lee of Pillar One Consulting, an HR consulting firm based in Washington, D.C. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Reston, Virginia, serving the D.C. area and clients across the country. Visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
For 125 years, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth of our nation's capital and its surrounding communities. Your support will help over 21,000 youth who need you most walk through the doors of a Boys and Girls Club and walk out with a plan for their future. Every dollar donated in fiscal year 2012 will be matched up to $250,000 by Stanley Martin Homes. You can help. Go online to www.bgcgw.org and change someone's life. This message is brought to you by GEICO.
This is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. The Federal News Countdown features the three most important federal news stories of the week, as selected this week by John Palguda and Deborah Roth. And Debbie, your most important federal news story of the week to wrap up the countdown is our obligatory fiscal cliff story. I'm very sorry, John. You were so happy about
I worked really hard
Jared's
that
story
night.
That didn't say have fiscal cliff at all. And Debbie chose her most important story with having it right in the headline. It's an LA
in
Times
quotes.
Story. Yes, in big quotes. It's probably bolded in the print edition, too. We pulled it off the Internet. Americans want compromise in fiscal cliff talks. It's Melanie Mason's story in the LA Times, and it's linked up at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. And you mentioned before we went on the air that your takeaway from this is it doesn't have anything to do with the politics. It doesn't have anything to do with the numbers in the polls. But the overwhelming result in your view is what?
Is that people just want a deal. They want compromise. They want a deal. That partisanship, we're worn down. The American public is worn down. And when you look at the polling numbers, where in 2011, the majority of Republicans, people who identified as Republicans, wanted their elected representatives to hold the line and hold their line, they're done. They're done holding the line. They just want a deal. The numbers are very interesting. 60% of people who identify as Republicans want to compromise, including some sort of increase in taxes. And, of course, we won't be surprised given the results of the general election. 70% of people who identify as Democrats want compromise. So, I mean, if you ever could hear a mandate, because they throw that word around all the time, you know, after general elections, we have a mandate. I think that's a mandate. And yet, if you are inside the Beltway, Do you really feel they're any closer to a deal? Does anyone really feel they're closer to a deal?
The only sense of comfort that I get is that we're not hearing any more than we are about the fact that there is something happening. We don't see now what we saw 2 weeks ago, which was, I don't like the other side. It's got to be my thing. And the other side says, no, it's got to be this thing. That's going away somewhat.
Here's what I hear the insiders are saying, and it's really, Francis, you know, I've been on your show now for a couple of years, and you and I can't remember if it was this summer or last summer, but we've been, every time I'm on the show for the last 2.5 years, one of your news stories is always, they can't pass a budget if their life depended on it. And, you know, if we all go back to our civics courses, we remember it's really Congress's job to pass a budget, and it's really the House's job.
Mm-hmm.
And the inside track is that they're going to do what they've done for 2.5 years. They're just going to kick the can. They're going to have some minor deal to get them over the January 1st hump so they can duke it out theoretically. We're going to kick the can one more time. If you can't stand these little phrases they come up with, like fiscal cliff, well, here's kick the can.
Yeah.
And they're going to kick the can down back into February. I think Americans are going to be suicidal.
I hope it's not that bad.
The other important statistic.
Maybe homicidal.
Yeah.
Hold that thought, Debbie, because we're almost out of time, and I want to get John in on this. The idea of this, it goes right back to what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, because the thinking about that and stretching this out for another 2 months is got to just make people inside the agencies bananas.
It does, Francis, because they can't manage well. They can't plan. They can't invest, for the say training and so on. They can't even on their operational plans. They're at a stalemate because they don't know what they're going to be dealing with.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to waste maybe a lot of time figuring out, well, how do we implement sequestration, which shouldn't never happen in the first place.
I got on this horse when we were talking about shutdowns there like 3 or 4 times right in a row over the course of a month and a half, and I think that was last spring of 2011.
Yeah, I think it was spring.
Nobody in Congress that I know of has ever commissioned any kind, either CBO or the Government Accountability Office, to figure out how much money the agencies had to spend to prepare for contingencies that never happened. And I wish I could remember who it was, if it was an investigative journalistic organization or whatever, because I would like to give them credit. But I remember the number being greater than the negotiation was over.
I was on that show.
That would have prevented. Okay, so you remember that conversation.
The number was astonishing.
So I'm not completely insane and just making this up as if it were a dream.
What they do to project what would happen if they have to shut it down because they can't agree.
Yeah.
And it was other people's money.
And so that wouldn't surprise me, John, if we find out that these agencies wind up spending more in time and energy and resources to prepare for these contingencies that never happen than the negotiations that the various sides are going through over them.
That's right. If you want to talk about government waste and inefficiency, there it is. And
we know where it's coming from.
It's not the doing of the executive branch.
Deborah Roth, your most important federal news story of the week is from the L.A. Times. The headline, Americans Want Compromise on Fiscal Cliff Talks. And you can read it and all of our stories on the Federal News Countdown at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. It goes by way too quick. It's great to have you back
Thank
on the
you.
Show, Debbie. Thanks
Thank
for coming
you.
On. John, great to see you, and congratulations to the partnership on the best places to work. Appreciate having you on the program
Thank
today.
Thank you, Francis. Always a pleasure.
All right. Hour number 2 of In-Depth with Francis Rose coming next on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.